My name is Janne Bak, and I'll be talking about Denmark, my home country. And I think that I'd like to start with my personal background rather than to let loose a lot of facts on you. Then I can, I'll just assume that there is an interest for my personal background. It seems like it when you first meet Americans that you know, what they're interested in is hearing about your family, etc. And then I can always bore you with some facts afterwards. I was born in 56, and I feel myself that a lot of things have happened in those 30 years, and therefore perhaps what I tell you will not give a typical or one-dimensional view of what Denmark is like and what growing up in or what a younger person in Denmark would tell you now. For example, I feel that I totally missed out on what the 60s meant also in Denmark in terms of youth culture and influence in general. And I come from a typical family, I would say, but also a more traditional family, where, for example, my mother didn't work, and my father started out as a farmer, which is also typical. And then, like a lot of other people, found that farming didn't really pay or was worth all the work, and gave that up and became a teacher instead. And my mother was educated as a nurse, but never worked because there was a need for her in the farming that they first undertook. And then they had my sister and my two brothers. And very quickly they had these three kids. And my sister and my brothers are all quite a lot older than I am, so I'm almost brought up as an only child. And actually, I'm the youngest of the whole family on both my mother and my father's side. So my sense of myself is very much tied in with my family, and strong personalities, stern, hardworking farmers, most of them. And I would say that's probably also untypical for a lot of young people, that they have that kind of feeling of being rooted back in that farmer culture, which has kind of dissolved since the 50s, I'd say. And a lot of my memories from my childhood is tied in with the family visits to these farms and the impact of these older family members of me with singing and storytelling and so on. I definitely come from a Christian background, and church was part of my upbringing, which is also less typical, I would say, for young people today, because the influence of the church is becoming less and less. And also, I was attending school while school was still somewhat more disciplined than it is today. I think today the school in school system in Denmark, or the educational system, is really known for being you know, very free and encouraging of the pupils to do study by means of helping themselves or helping each other, and teamwork democratic and social skills, and in general bringing people up to be good citizens. And high school was a really good experience for me. A highlight, I'd say it was a very good cultural input or education in a broad sense. And then besides, what has had a great impact on me was horseback riding, which I've been doing a lot on my own, and really made me very, very fond of the countryside in Denmark. So what I really appreciate when I think about my home country is the countryside and our democratic, humanistic culture or values, which again are tied in with my with what my family stands for. Perhaps I should just show you a few things on that.
Well, it's not very big, but anyway, here in the middle of Jutland is my hometown, which is a town of 40,000 people, and it's really very pretty situated at the largest river run in Denmark runs through it, and there's a lake system and a lot of forests surrounding the lakes. Then when I started studying theology, I moved out to Aarhus here, which is a university city and the second largest city in Denmark, which still means that there's only 350,000 people live in it. And it's kind of a very functional city, not a very pretty one, I would say, though the surroundings are pretty, the beaches and so on. So I never enjoyed that a whole lot. And when I returned to Denmark last autumn, I spent the autumn in Copenhagen, which is a city of a little more than 1 million people. The population in total is a little more than 5 million. And Copenhagen is a really pleasant city, a lot of parks with old castles in them and a nice waterfront. A city center with pedestrian streets and restored old city houses, etc. So I mean, and you can see how Denmark is surrounded by water. Our only frontier is
boundary
to Germany. And it's only like 50 miles, something like that. And so we've got a huge beach line, and we've got 497 islands, and only like 93 of them are inhabited. A lot of them are really small. And water has had a great impact on what Denmark is in terms of its culture, etc. With a lot of trade, Denmark has been like a land bridge between Germany and Scandinavia. And, Denmark has always felt a definite affinity to Sweden and Norway, and has always resisted influence from Europe, mainly from Germany, coming up that way. Also during the Second World War, Denmark was used as a land bridge to get to Norway. And, at least that was the excuse that the Germans used, that they were only using Denmark to get up there, but actually Denmark was occupied and used as a place to get a lot of food from. And a lot of our cities are placed at these fjords, a lot of fjords that cut into the country. And in our history, a lot of our importance has been based on our naval force, and well, it started with the Vikings and Leif the Hattie, who discovered Iceland, Greenland, and North America, and also yeah, and we also, you know, fought the England, the English, a whole lot, Sweden and Norway, and we had parts of Sweden like this pale-looking country over here is Sweden, we had parts of that, and Norway, I think parts of Sweden till, would it be the beginning of last century or something, and we had control over Norway till around 1840, which actually surprised me to find out about that. And also today about our military forces based on the naval, on the navy. Not that the armament is very strong in the Norwegian navy. I think if we use, that's my guess, that it would be at the most 10% of our income that is used on armament. But since we're part of NATO, we have agreed to a certain armament. And there's actually quite a lot of resistance in Denmark now against NATO, as well as against being members of the common market, which we entered into because England did as our main trade partner in 72. And a lot of people feel that those influences from Europe and also from the States tend to dissolve the Danish culture, what is intrinsic and what we see as valuable of Danish culture, that, you know, things are dissolving.
When I talk about Danish culture, a lot of it, the democratic values, etc., go back to a theologian. In the middle of last century, we had some great revivals, and there were two great persons that are connected with that, and one was Kierkegaard, who is known as the sad Dane type, kind of a very gloomy, a gloomy outlook on life, but let's say a very sincere or important view, I would say. And the other one is connected with Grundtvig, who was more of a creation theologian and who is known as the Happy Dane. And this Grundtvig, this Happy Dane, had a lot of importance on our culture in general, because he started the folk high schools, which are still very important, and who and which were used to educate people in general, that the young farmers, both men and women, would go to the high schools and be taught a lot on Danish history and culture and religion, and also farming and skills like that. And I think that it has had an enormous influence for making the Danish population such a homogeneous population. We have got today we've got one big middle class, and then we've got a small rich class and a small poor class, but it's really very homogeneous and not very hierarchical. And also Grundtvig inspired the farmers to unite in corporations like slaughterhouses and dairies and so on, to get control over their own production, and that created a very strong and independent farmer population that really had some control over what over their work and their life. And I think that has also had an influence for the workers. When the farmers moved from the countryside and into the cities and became workers, that same spirit went with them, and I think that helped create like strong unions and a sense of self-worth and will to have some influence on your own conditions in life. And it seems to me that split between the sad Dane and the happy Dane has almost today resulted in a split between the church and the secular society. Denmark is actually a very secular society. Today the church hasn't got a very great influence. Christianity has had a great influence in this more general cultural democratic sense, with a lot of Christian values underlying our society, but not in a very personal devoted sense. And then the sad Dane attitude has had great influence within the church. That is the trend that has become dominant within the church, and that means that for many people, especially for young people, the church represents kind of a rigid institution that is presents outdated views and is not at the cutting edge of things. And I felt that frustration myself with this heavy institution that didn't allow for any renewal or experiments. And a lot of our rituals, etc., date right back to the Reformation and haven't been changed very much. For example, just one thing like the language that is used in the church is kind of outdated and very heavy, and it has been very inspiring for me to come here and see how you experiment with worship. And I find that the English language is a much better language to express yourself in as regards religious matters, and I often, you know, pull my hair out because I think, well, how can I transfer this back to Danish? What would we say in Danish? And I find we haven't got the same expressions. This is frustrating. The church in Denmark is a Lutheran national church, and that means that about 90% of the population are members of it, and you become a member by being baptized. And just like 10 years ago, people wouldn't really question whether you wanted to have your child baptized or not, so you almost automatically became a member. Now it has become more usual not to baptize children or to choose to step out of the church, which means that you don't pay the church tax. But a lot of people pay church tax, which is like 0.7% of your tax goes to the church and is used for maintaining the church buildings. We've got a lot of beautiful old churches that date back from 1100 and up, and it costs a lot to maintain them. And also the church tax goes to pay the pastors, etc. And then the collections in the church go for other purposes. And of course, I've been asking myself whether our church structure in Denmark is less conducive for a more lively congregational life than is your independent congregations here. But then again, I would say that our framework is a good one, and what seems to be the main problem is that that people don't seem to be willing to engage themselves or commit themselves so much as I've experienced here. And some blame can be put on the church too, that it hasn't had the courage to really be on the cutting edge of things. But I don't feel that the church or the pastors in Denmark are being controlled by the fact that we are a national church. Sometimes I even feel that perhaps we are, as pastors, would be more free to speak up than are the pastors here, who seem to be more dependent on what the members of the church think of them and their work, and have to pay attention to the economical factor. But I think perhaps there is that you can see some change within the church in Denmark, because I know at least a lot of young pastors who work to change things simply because they are frustrated with things as they are, and I think a lot depends on the development within the next years. Well, perhaps I should get into some more facts. Our climate is temperate, is that the word? Which means that the average temperature for the coldest month in Denmark is 31 Fahrenheit, and for the warmest month is 67 Fahrenheit. But our weather is really varied, and we get a lot of both cold and hot weather too. And our day ranges from 7 hours in the winter till 17.5 during summer, so we have some beautiful light summer evenings. And if you go to Denmark, you'll get the impression that Denmark is definitely a farming country. Most of the country is used for farming, but actually only 6% of the population is working as farmers now, and 3/4 of the population are living in cities. And that change has happened mainly since the Second World War, that it was turned completely upside down as to the percentage of the population that was working in farming on one hand and industry on the other. And also we have a lot of people employed in service work and administration and education. Education is really taken seriously in Denmark, because it's seen as our own raw material, good brains, because we haven't got any raw materials at all in Denmark. Perhaps the fact that so many people are occupied in service occupations means that at least some think that is why our economical situation is so bad. We really live well in Denmark, and Denmark is a social welfare country. I think we've got one of the best service welfare systems together with Sweden. But it costs a lot of money, and a lot of them we have borrowed, so we are in debt, so it's kind of a paradoxical situation that we live really well, but it's on money that we have borrowed. And education is free in Denmark, and hospitalization, and there are a lot of social programs and good retirement, and people who are unemployed are paid 90% of their former wages, and so on. And unemployment is a problem too in Denmark now. And normally we have a social democratic government. The Social Democratic Party is the biggest party in Denmark, but just now we have got a conservative government, and the conservative government sees it as the most important task to try to pay off our debts, whereas the Social Democratic Party sees it as its most important task to, you know, get rid of unemployment, and argues that if we don't get rid of unemployment, in the long run, we'll not be able to stabilize our economical situation, and we won't be able to pay our debts back. But anyway, one party is not able to govern in Denmark because we've got 13 different parties. So it always has to be, the government always has to be made up from a coalition of parties that govern over the broad middle, so that secures some stability in our political situation. And also our taxes are really high. And
what's the percent?
Well, it can, rich people may pay up to 80% taxation, and I, as a student who would be having summer jobs, would be taxed 40% of 40 or 45% of what I earned.
In exchange for that, did you get a lot of education free?
Education is free, yes, and every student is given a government grant that would pay like half of the expenses for your living. And then you can choose to either take cheap loans or you can work. And I've been working a lot, mostly in old folks' homes, which I really appreciated that experience besides studying. But now, again, it's getting more difficult to find work. And, well, perhaps I should just mention about the political situation that Denmark is the oldest monarchy in Europe. And that we've got a Queen Margaret II for the moment. And besides, our debts and our unemployment, pollution is a very hot political issue, and we really use a lot of money to fight pollution. And I think, or I have heard people say that something that really struck them that when they got to Denmark was how clean a country Denmark is. And also in industry, the risk of pollution and something like reducing the risk factor, etc., is something which is really concerned. And we're discussing nuclear energy and alternative energy a lot, and we haven't got nuclear energy yet. And armament is something else which is really discussed. And peace and third world issues and human rights, etc. And a lot of these issues are taken very seriously by grassroots movements. In contrast to here, these grassroots movements are secular movements, whereas here I find that a lot of these concerns are concerns that people within the church work for. And that's something that I'm also frustrated about, that people with whom I feel that I really have concerns in common are people whom I won't find within the church. Well, I think I should stop here. Well, I will stop here.
Before we start, Jenna made it's a Swedish recipe, gingerbread, ginger cookie actually.
What I would pass it on.
Even if you had a lot of ice cream, you could still eat.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should also start by telling a little bit who I am. My name is Anna Jung, and I grew up in Sweden. grew up on a fairly, well, I grew up on an island, which was pretty isolated from the rest of Sweden. But on the island, we had everything we needed. It wasn't undeveloped or in any way like that. It took about 5 hours to get to the island from Stockholm, which is the capital of Sweden. So you can maybe imagine, it's like going from Chelan up to here, that far. I grew up with my parents and two older brothers. When I finished high school, I felt that, or when I was about to finish high school, I felt that I had grew up in a very safe town, a safe family, and I just needed to expand that. I needed to see more things before I head on to further education. So I applied to go abroad to another country with an exchange program. And I actually asked to go to Japan, but I ended up going to New York City instead. Well, not New York City, New York State. So I spent a year in New York State working at a camp, a Lutheran camp. And after that year, I was supposed to be back in Sweden, but I had such a good experience. And I wasn't ready for school yet, so I extended my visa, went to California, worked for another Lutheran camp, and came up to Holden in September. When I came to Holden, I was going to stay for 3 weeks. Now I've been here about 6 or 7 months. But I do plan to go back sometime. I have some slides that I want to show. They're from Sweden in general and also from the area where I live. And feel free to ask if there is something that I can't explain well, and if you feel like you need more explanations.
Play sports over there. How much sports do you guys play in school?
If you want to be active in a sport. Yeah, that's a sweet slide, by the way. The cross. The cross probably symbolizes the Christianity. That's what I would say.
Yeah, the Danish flag has the same cross on white cross on a red background.
Where does that cross come from?
I think it symbolizes Christianity. So, I don't know if the flag is not older. It just was my guess. We didn't know that it's cool. Well, back to your question. Yeah. In school, or if you want to be active in a sport team, then it doesn't have anything to do with the school. Like here, if you want to play football in college, if you want to play football in America, you do it with the school, right? But in Sweden, it's a separate part. It's not connected. But as your education in school, you do have good classes. I would say as much as you have here, maybe a bit more.
Yeah, I would like to add that it's the same in Denmark and in yeah, we have exercises in school, but they are or sports, but they're much more for a social skill purpose. Much where it's my impression that you are very, very competitive in sports here and doesn't at all play the same role with it.
Yours is more of a physical education rather than a sports mind.
Yeah.
Okay, is that home?
This is Sweden. I look at Sweden.
Is this your home movies?
No. The first slides are from Sweden in general, and then some of them will come in with from my area, or from where I grew up, and then the end are basically from the island where I grew up. And again, feel free to ask.
Are any of these pictures of Vermland?
What's that?
You know that place, Vermland, or something?
Vermland? No. There's not.
Is this the one you showed 6 months ago, Anna?
Who's supposed to do that? yeah, some of them are. They're a little different. So in the special group, there are special slides. Okay.
Pan-picked for us.
Sweden is a fairly long country. It's about from, let's say, from Seattle down to LA, something like that.
Now?
Yeah.
Where is your island in that now?
Oh.
I can go and show them.
Okay.
Oh, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. That's the island. The island is called Gotham. Because you try to translate it, would mean good land. And as I said, it takes 5 hours to get to the island with a ferry from Stockholm, which is the capital. I can come to the island later. As you see, our neighbors are Norway, Finland, and Denmark. No, we don't know that. We're not backwards, but... Southern part of Sweden is fairly flat with a lot of farmers. So the immigrants that came from Sweden about 100 or 150 years ago basically came from a countryside that looked like this. I spent Christmas 84 in Minnesota, and it was easy for me to understand that my old grandparents would move to that area too, to Minnesota, because it looked so much alike. I assume that some of you do have some Swedish blood. There are good people here.
This looks a lot like Denmark.
Yeah. Look, that's like Dana said, look.
Looks a lot like Iowa too.
Like Illinois. Looks like Ellensburg.
But there are parts,
wow,
like up in the northern part, that have mountains and lakes. We get a lot of snow. This is probably, I don't know when it could be. Probably in May, June maybe. I can't tell. And it's a typical relaxing time with friends. Sweden is a monarchy. We have a king. The king is the younger person in this picture. His name is Carl the 16th Gustav. He doesn't have any political power, but he still represents our country. And personally, I feel good about having a king or a queen who can in some way make good connections between Sweden and other countries. Even if we, of course, take a lot of our tax money. But personally, I feel good about that.
The president definitely says too. Mm-hmm. Take a lot of your tax money.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again.
And it's the same in Sweden. A lot of tax money. A rich person would have to pay about 80%. Normal or middle income would be 30-35. There was one case when the order of Peter Longstocking, is anybody familiar with Peter Longstocking?
Yeah.
Okay, the woman who wrote that book is Astrid Lindgren, and it happened one that she paid about 110% in tax. I don't know how the reason was, but it was a very... A lot of it was written in the newspaper.
Who's he shaking hands with?
Say that again?
Who's he shaking hands
with? Oh, good question. Have anybody heard about the Nobel Prize?
Sure.
This is the 10th of December when the Nobel Prize Festival is. I don't know who he is. Smart old man. It's a big festival and people follow it on the TV and there's not enough money involved. Yeah, it could be Danish. Yeah. This is just, how would I explain that? When the government have a meeting.
Parliament.
Thanks. Right now the political part that's in power is the social democrats. There's been social democrats for about 20 years with a rate of 3 years in the middle of the 70s. And maybe you've heard that a big tragedy happened the 28th of February this year, which was a big shock for the whole country, and personally I didn't know how to deal with feelings about it. But the Prime Minister of Palma was killed on the street. He was walking back from a theater with his wife and was shot down. It is very upsetting that it happened, wherever it happens, but typical in Sweden, something like that just don't happen, it can't happen. Last time it happened was that a person with a political power or a king was killed in 1772. So if someone gets killed, people will know, even if it's a worker or an artist or whatever, people know if someone gets killed. So if a famous person like this old Palme, the Prime Minister, gets killed, it's a very, very deep thing.
Anna?
Yeah?
What's hanging from the roof that looks like it's lit up? Is that how they vote?
Yeah, they vote. And to know how the outcome was, the different colors tell. About this, the death of Olof Palme, there was immediately a new person who was the Prime Minister. The new person is called Ingvar Gustafsson. No, Ingvar Carlsson, I'm sorry. I don't know much about him. If something would happen with Olof Palme, he would be president who was getting. And it's pretty interesting. Olof Palme did not, part of his politics was that he should be able to live a normal life, to go to a theater, to go to a movie, stand in line, and be just like another Swedish citizen. And he did that. He didn't have a life or a bodyguard. So now that is gone. That freedom that we have been able to keep have now been disturbed. And it's hard to know where the peace is going to go in the country. We haven't been involved in a war for 150 years. That was with Denmark. But Jen and I are still friends. And this is from Stockholm. As I said, it's the capital. The bigger square building to the right is the castle where the king and his family used to live. And also, of course, a lot of rooms for meeting the people here and there. Stockholm is a close town with a lot of water. More than half of the country, I think actually about 55% of the country is covered by forest. So a lot of industry comes from the woods. Like for example in the village, one example that we had is one of the looms, the Swedish looms. Other industry is Volvo and Saab. Maybe one of you are lucky to have one. this is the airplane called Viggen. I don't know if it's famous.
How did you take that picture?
Oh, I was on flying one day, so I think my camera with me.
Yeah. Spent a lot of time in the club.
Yeah.
Did you have a head-on collision?
Yeah, I did.
You saved your camera.
Yeah. from God, so I had a couple of them. I bought the pictures. What I saw last time was that before I came to Sweden, I went up to the king and talked to him, and he gave me some pictures to show people, kind of as propaganda, and this is one of them.
I believed you.
Yeah, I know, that's why I'm telling you again. If you look at this picture, you would see the typical tree, the typical blonde hair and blue eyes.
Okay.
And
friends, other people come.
Yeah. What I want to show with pictures is that there are a lot of immigrants, a lot of people coming from Sweden, from Slovakia, Yugoslavia, Turkey, and Poland, and other East European countries. And today, every fourth child who was born in Sweden have at least one parent who were not born in Sweden. Mm-hmm. So there's a big percentage of immigrants. But no black people. The problem that comes up is of course to find a job. They come to get a job and have fairly good chances to do. But then the culture problems are created between this culture. Like example, between the Yugoslavian people and the people from Turkey. And also a lot of people from Finland, I forget to say that. A lot of Finnish people have problems with Swedish culture. And there are fairly serious problems. And there isn't many people from Asia. The only Asian people or people from Latin America are children who are adopted, who come alone, not to the family. Who come with not a lot of possibilities to keep the culture. But the immigrants that come have good chances to get training in school to keep their own language. Like, if these people send their children to school, which they do, they learn their own language, sometimes even more than they are pushed to learn Swedish. The reason is probably because they're going to have a chance to go back to the country. But still, if they come to the country, then it's hard for them to integrate if they don't know the language.
What's the major language?
Oh, it's Swedish. Yeah. Swedish and Danish is fairly similar.
English much?
Everybody has to take 7 years of English. So if you come, you can get along without any problems. People will speak English. They might not feel so comfortable because they might be shy, but you won't have problems.
So children of immigrants may end up taking three languages, their own, Swedish, and English.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, yeah. I can tell more about my own school's education when I come to Chile later on. But good that you brought it up. One thing, when I meet people, one thing they know about Sweden is that it's a socialized system. And it means in Sweden that you don't need to pay money to send your kids to a nursing school, to a daycare center, like with children. The parents don't have to pay money for it, but there might not be enough space for it. There might not be enough room or open opportunities for them.
Do you hear a lot of people
complaining
that they pay so much in taxes to furnish people with free daycare?
My dad pays about 80% in tax. And he often wonders where the money goes. But he likes his job so much, so he's willing to do this. But people wonder, that there's still a feeling of taking part, of paying the tax and knowing that you pay tax but you're going to be able to send your kids to a nursing home or to school without worrying about money. And also, medical care is taken care of. So we come to that soon later. This is from the town where I grew up. The building to the left is my school. Everybody has to go 9 years of school. From first to ninth grade. Then you're done. Completely done. You don't have to go to school anymore. The three last years, you start learning a third language. So you learn Swedish, English, and a third language. And then you have the opportunity, if you want to go further, to what we call gymnasium, which is the age level is like your high school, but the study level is a little bit beyond it. It's more, I would use the word pressure, it's more pressure. You're forced to learn more. But still about 90% go to gymnasium. I read an article once and it said that the Swedish gymnasium is one of the very best education for people in that age, which is from 15, 16 up to 18 or 19 years old. When I went to gymnasium, which is this school to the that you can see to the left, I went 3 years and had science as my major. So when I decided to have science as my major, that it was going to take me 3 years. In these 3 years, I had 16 subjects. Everything from a lot of math, physics, chemistry, biology, psychology, philosophy, four languages, art, history, and so on. I spent about 4 hours a day doing homework. Maybe when I look back, I think I studied a bit more than other people did. But it wasn't that uncommon that you spend that much time studying.
Were any of the classes taught in English aside from English class?
No. The only class I was taught in English was the English class. And very well English class that we were forced to speak English the whole time, which helped very much. Then after gymnasium, you're able to go to university. There is nothing like college in Sweden. If you don't want to go to university, you go to some other private school. And up the first 9 years in gymnasium is all paid for. You have to pay for the rest of your education. Your first 12 years are all expensive. There are some private schools that you can go from first to 12th grade. I would guess it's 5 in the whole time. As I said, the medical is taken care of. If you get in an accident, if you have cancer, if you break a leg, you don't need to worry about having enough money. You go to the hospital, you're taken to the hospital, and you're not asked a thousand of questions whether your parents have insurance for you or your religion, or what you work with, or something like that, which is happening here, that you're taken care of. You only pay a token, which is about $8 or $10. The country is Christian. There's about 90% Lutheran and 10% Catholic, or I would say 9% Catholic, and then some Muslims, but not a big part of it. There's two kinds of churches. There's the Lutheran Church, which is actually the state church, which means that it's
it's supported by the government and it's kind of it's owned by the government. So if you're born a student, if you're a citizen, then you're automatically a member of the Lutheran Church. But if you don't want to be a member, you can do as Jana said in Denmark. You can, you know, you don't need to pay the tax. There is also the other group of churches, the free church, what we call, which is like all of your churches there. Independent and no connection to the government or the state. And I grew up going to one of these free churches, the Swedish Covenant Church. If I should compare the American Lutheran Church like what we have in here, Holden, and maybe what you come from, it would be the Lutheran Church of Sweden. The church where I go up, there is no liturgy, but still, well, that's a big difference, no liturgy. Well, that's the norm. Does anybody know what this is? Santa Lucia. It's a festival of light that takes place before Christmas. It's proclaiming that Jesus is soon going to be born. And Lucia is coming with her angels early in the morning, singing songs and giving or serving coffee to the people. Some of us did this at Holden here this winter. Another culture thing is the midsummer, which is in the middle of the year. It's celebrated in the middle of June. It's a 24-hour celebration, being together, dancing, singing, dressing this pole like you see in the middle. It's covered by flowers and other green things.
Wouldn't there be bonfire on that night?
No, no bonfire that night. No.
Well, we can then maybe when we have a bonfire.
Yeah. Well, if you want to come and visit me, which would be fun, then you would come with this ferry into the town, which is called Lutherville. Do you remember how many hours it took?
Five.
Yeah. 5 hours.
You call that a big ship a ferry?
Well, would you call it laid up the lake?
Ocean liner.
Yeah, it has steam powder. It even has a swimming pool and TV.
I wondered where it was called a ferry.
Ferry is a normal ferry, boat, car. I think that's different.
Oh, so what would you call it? Do you want to call it a ferry?
Oh,
a cruise ship.
You're saying you want a cruise ship.
Oh, okay. Language problem, sorry.
But does your ferry carry cars also?
Yeah.
So it is a ferry.
The boat. The transportation. So now you've moved yourself into this, or onto this island, which has a lot of history. And from the 11th to 16th century, you had big connections with Germany and Denmark, which have influenced the typical language on the island and also the buildings. Not the people, thank you. Yeah. Of course the people. It was it's the trading center, the center of where big ships or ferries for boats would come to the island and trade. Other countries that would come would be Finland, Russia, Poland, Germany, Denmark,